Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
A beautiful Wednesday afternoon on Michigan Avenue. We sit here in the Showcase Studio, the Allstate Showcase Studio. Frank Sennett will be here from Cranes a little bit later. We'll talk about the mayor's plan to build that high-speed train from downtown to O'Hare. Also, later in the program, we're going to talk to a neuroscientist, I think, a PhD, a guy who looks at your brain on financial fear, like when you're freaked out a little bit about finances. And they sort of studied brainwaves and how it works on you. Now, Terry Savage is in the studio. You're looking at me very excitedly. It was also done on behalf of a financial planner's office. So they say that your brain is much better when you're getting advice, which is true. But we'll talk about that.
Well, that is the advantage of a financial planner. If it's a good financial planner,
it takes away the
stress. You're panicked because it's your money, he or she isn't so panicked because you're just their client.
And, yeah, it's not their
so
money.
So they can become.
Okay, Terry's here. There's so much to talk about.
Okay,
every year at this time, we talk about gifts for kids, and we'll
do
that in the second segment.
Okay.
So the Republicans in the House, I think it is, are going to unveil their higher education plan. I think it expired a few years ago, but they keep extending it. It's interesting to me. It's really preliminary. It's going to take a year or two to go through, unlike tax cuts or health care reform. But it shows the way they're hoping to engineer education and funding in the country. One thing they would put a cap... again, this probably won't be the final bill. It's very early. But they want to put a cap on the amount of loans a student can get. They want to put more money toward trade schools and away from these prestigious four-year universities because they say a lot of students are going to school on
and becoming
federal,
Uber drivers.
Yeah, on federal aid and then not getting an education that serves them in the career. The government money, they are arguing, shouldn't go toward an overall education but toward maybe more career preparation.
Okay, so my mind is still spinning about the tax bill that is wending its way through Congress and all the ramifications. So they brought up today that as soon as they finish with health care, which they sort of didn't finish, and with taxes, they want to attack the education system. And I'll tell you something, it's too early to discuss, but some of their proposals have some merit in the sense that a lot of federal money has been given out since the government really took it over about a decade ago. Student loans outstanding have doubled, the federal student loans, now $1.3 trillion more than credit card debt. And there has been no accountability to not forget the students. They're accountable. You cannot default. You cannot go bankrupt on a student loan, federal student loan. But on the schools, some of them for-profit and some of them not-for-profit universities, there's been no accountability. You pass through these student loans through the universities. How about the kids that drop out? How about the kids that don't get jobs?
Well, it's
so
funny.
I think there's in this bill a little bit of an attempt to make the institutions accountable for both higher tuitions and the results of the education.
It's funny you used the word attack because I think a lot of four-year schools feel that this will be an attack on them because of what you just mentioned. My feeling is that I don't want kids not to go to school because they can't get loans. But if you tighten up the money, it seems to me the schools will spend as much money as they can get in. And so if you tighten up the loans and the amount of money that they're getting, maybe they won't be building four and five rec centers that schools don't. You know,
maybe the tuition won't rise that much. Maybe they won't pay the football coach $1 million.
No, that's
good money. That's good money. Go blue. There has been a lack of business-type accountability in the education world. There's been a lack of accountability for results. There's been a lack of accountability for the value of spending. And some schools have been very responsible, and others, especially those that depend on state governments, have been caught in a bind now.
So we're at the very beginning of that. Let's hope
that'll
that
be
they
the
can...
next big thing after health care and taxes.
Let's hope
what
they can
they
take
mess
time.
Up more?
Well, let's hope they can take time and do it in
that's what I said about
a
healthcare.
Proper way. I know.
Then I said that about taxes.
Taxes are going to happen, don't you think?
Something's going to happen. You know, if you look at it this way, not about any of the specific proposals. As you know, and you've heard me say many times, we have a long history of proving under both Democrats and Republicans that tax cuts do stimulate economic growth. Forget who gets the tax cuts. tax cuts benefit ultimately the entire economy. And this Congress, which has been so irresponsible, both Democrats and Republicans, don't forget, it's not like we've never run a deficit. This past year, we had a billion dollar budget deficit, almost more than half $1 trillion. In the best year with economic growth, we're still running $500 to $700 billion budget deficits each year. Suddenly they found responsibility, and they say that if we cut taxes, what we have to do is take it out of older people who have medical expenses that could be deducted, out of students' deductibility on the interest on the loans that they're burdened with. It's such a mean-spirited and illogical debate, because the idea of cutting taxes is that Kennedy, Reagan, Clinton, those cuts made the economy grow.
So you want the tax cuts. Jobs. You want the tax cuts.
Yeah, but without
you don't
all
like
the
some
mean
of the
offsets.
Okay.
No, because you know what? We've been running huge deficits anyway. What do they suddenly got to go after
people that have a few deductions? Are you okay with deficits?
You know what? We've survived these deficits. And I think the only way out of the huge, you know, don't forget we're at a $20 trillion national debt when you add up all the deficits. The only way out is not more taxes. It's economic growth.
So I sent you an email last night. I asked you to bring in some Bitcoins for me.
Yes, I said, I'm sorry if I'd have to get to my vault before I got here, and I didn't know
you
if
didn't
I would
go
be
mining,
able to.
You didn't go mining for Bitcoins for me last night?
I did not go mining for Bitcoins.
11,000?
The vault is, by the way, you know, they call them vaults or wallets or exchanges. Where you translate your dollars or euros or yen into bitcoins. And about a year ago at this time, it took $800 to buy a bitcoin. And as of today, it's more than, I don't have an immediate thing, 11,000 US dollars to buy a bitcoin. And we're going to laugh about this next year.
The Fed, Dudley gave a speech yesterday, William Dudley. He's the New York Fed, right?
Yes.
And he said that the Federal Reserve is looking at creating its own digital currency. So,
well, we talked last week. We must all understand Bitcoin is one digital currency that there's a mania developed because. But the concept behind these digital currencies is something called the blockchain ledger. I won't get into it. It will revolutionize bank payments. And it's the digital wave of the future, just as we don't really write too many paper checks anymore.
That's Terry Savage. Get out your pen and paper, because when we come back, she's got some really cool gift ideas for kids to teach them how to become, well, miserly at a very young age.
No, generous
no,
as
that's
well.
Right. That's right. And to try to take care of money. All right. That's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Now, a little bit later in the program, Frank Sennett will be here. One of the things we're going to talk about is Governor Rauner's Medicaid overhaul plan that has been announced. And there are certainly winners and losers there. We'll talk to Frank about what they've been covering in Cranes when it comes to Medicaid. Right now, Terry Savage is in the studio. Read her columns at terrysavage.com. And the latest column is one about money gifts, financial gifts.
Well, you know,
money-savvy gifts.
I've been on a crusade. I've done this every year for as long as I can remember. And now some of the people that heard it, that received these gifts as children are giving it to their own children.
And, you know, I sent you a note. I got a Facebook Messenger post this week from a woman who it's almost like it came up in her brain because it's this time of year about this one where you can buy partial stocks for people.
Okay, you want to talk about
that
first? There's a column up now at terrysavage.com, Holiday Gifts That Teach Kids About Money. Let me just say that it starts with some basic things like this plastic four-chambered pigs.
We'll get there then. Talk about the money-savvy pig.
Okay. The Money Savvy Pig is my favorite all-time gift for kids, and I've given them to now my granddaughters. The translucent four-chambered pig for save, spend, donate, invest, with a slot for each one so the kids can see where their money is going. Think about it. It costs $19.95 at moneysavvy.com.
And M-O-N-E-Y-S-A-V-V-Y. The idea is they're saving. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're saving, and they're also understanding the purpose of saving, some to spend now when they go to the store, but some to invest. So you're
and
teaching
to donate.
Kids, and to donate, exactly. So it comes with a workbook. You can get the workbook. There's a couple of other booklets. Susan Beecham, a Chicago entrepreneur, created this company years ago, and I just think it's a spectacular thing. MoneySavvy.com.
Two V's, MoneySavvy.com.
Right, S-A-V-V-Y, right.
I want my kids to give a lot to charity so I won't have to.
But okay. You get the tax. Don't go there.
Okay.
Now, the other thing people always ask me is, I would like to buy stocks for my children. Now, we're way past. There are still companies that'll buy a share of stock and frame it for you, and that's not. We're way past that era. We're now in the era where very easily, using your own credit card, you can either buy a gift card for your child or print one out or get a plastic gift card and open an account that buys fractional shares. So you could start with as little as $5, or you can put some money in there if you've got a teenage kid and put a couple of $100 in there and be a, have a custodial account and let the child trade. I really like Amazon. No, I'm not wearing Nike shoes anymore. I'm switching to Reebok. Whatever the thing is, the Xbox is going to be good or bad. All those things, the child can have fractional shares. So you could start with a small amount. The company that does this is called Stockpile, StockPile.com. And if you want to give a gift, at the top of their website, stockpile.com, look at gift cards, because there are three ways to give a gift. You can send it by email. You charge this to your credit card or debit card, or use PayPal to do it. Or you can print out a paper gift card at home. Or they have plastic gift cards, and typically those have a stock's name on it, but the child can use the money on the card to buy any stock. But it could be Tesla, it could be Amazon, it could be Alphabet.
So the idea is the child finds a company that they have a relationship with.
Yeah, there's an app they can download so they can learn about investing, and they see real time. I mean, they can't buy and sell during the day. The purchases are made at the end of the day, so they're not instant speculators. But you can buy fractional shares. So you might own $25 worth of Amazon and $25 worth of Alphabet. Stockpile.com, that's the way to do it now to get a child interested in individual stocks, although they do have ETFs. So if that's what you want to do. Now, I must give you a quick warning. At age 18, that account, your kid's really bright, and the account grows to, $12,000.
Kid's got the money.
It's at the age of majority that belongs to the kid. And it also, because as a child you do it in a custodial account, the money counts more heavily against you in the college aid formula at that point. But you can worry about that.
Or if you're buying a gift for parents of young kids and you want to help them out, Ron Lieber's book is a great one. I had Ron on a few years ago. I know you like
him as
well.
I love his book, How to Raise... Well,
The Opposite of Spoiled.
The Opposite of Spoiled.
Raising Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Money.
He's a Chicagoan, yes. And by the way, one other thing. I know it's really... You want to see the toys there unwrapped and everything, but you should be contributing to a 529 account for your grandchild. Read the column at TerrySavage.com. Go to SavingForCollege.com. In Illinois now, you won't get ratings for their performance because they've rearranged their funds, but Bright Start Savings is back on track, and you get a tax deduction as an Illinois resident up to $10,000.
It will pay off huge down the road.
And it's tax-free money that grows tax-free. Can be used any college in any state and any child of the family. So a 529 college savings plan contribution. You don't get a deduction yourself, but it's a great gift.
Get details on all of that at TerrySavage.com. Wednesday, November 29th, just a week ago, we were fantasizing about turkey. And now not so much. Now we're looking forward to Christmas, I guess. Frankly, if I can be perfectly honest, I'm just looking forward to talking to Frank Sennett, who is here from Crane Chicago Business. Frank, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Yeah, no, how are you?
I'm good. Sorry about that. I was so excited to talk to you, I hit the wrong button. How was your Thanksgiving?
I'm better on mute, people tell me.
Well, I wasn't going to say that. And it's not true on radio.
It was good. We went to Bourbon Country down in Kentucky, spent Thanksgiving Day at Churchill Downs playing the ponies. Traditional Thanksgiving.
Oh, good for you. That does sound like fun. I know that you are a restaurant guy, and on your list we're going to talk about a restaurant a little bit later. But I want to start by discussing this Greg Hines column, which I think was probably put up yesterday. But the mayor put out requests for, not quite requests for bids, I don't think, but this idea of building a high-speed train from downtown Chicago out to O'Hare. Is it really going to happen?
Yeah, so they put out an RFQ, Request for Qualifications, and that's the big question. Could it happen? A former CTA and Federal Transportation official that Greg talked to, Bob Rivkin, said it is doable. And, there will be people, he thinks, companies that will step up and say, yeah, we can build this without taxpayer funds, make some money doing it. They're talking about $20 each way,
right,
or more for the ride. So it wouldn't be free, but cheaper than a cab ride from downtown. And then it would get you there to the airport or back in 20 minutes or less from downtown.
Which is faster than twice as fast as the Blue Line. And just a little faster than taking a car.
Yeah, slightly faster.
But I'm interested that you just said something about it could be done without public funds. So this would be a private company building, and this is like the old days, right? A private company building a railroad and then operating a railroad within the city limits.
Absolutely. And it's like, the tide has turned in a lot of locales against public stadium financing for sports teams. You know, maybe we are seeing, more interest in private toll roads and private rail lines like this as a way to not dip into the taxpayer's pocket and, hopefully get some good service.
And $20. Would you pay $20 to go out to O'Hare if you had to catch a flight?
Absolutely. I mean, it's cheaper than a cab ride.
Would they make it? I suppose they could make it a transportation hub then from the suburbs, right? A PACE bus sort of spider web out of O'Hare as well?
I would think that they could take advantage of that, piggyback on that, and become kind of like a park and ride center. It could really, be something that people would use when they, maybe go downtown to work a couple of days a week, or shopping expedition, or when you think about the cost of parking downtown and the gas and everything, maybe people would do it on a daily basis.
Yeah, you're coming down to the McCormick Place area down to for a DePaul game, right? That wouldn't be a bad way in. Now the mayor. The mayor talked to some people in China about this. I see Elon Musk's name coming up. Where are we as far as I think Elon Musk has enough to do.
Yeah, now there's reports circulating online with interesting theories that he may be the guy behind Bitcoin. I just read that yesterday. there were a lot of holes poked in that. But yeah, Elon Musk is like the new Howard Hughes.
I mean, yeah, I do feel like sometimes his name is brought up and it's just like, okay, well, that's fine. But let's find someone else. I mean, but the mayor has been talking to people who are interested in doing this.
Yeah, and they want responses by January 24th. So we're on a fast track.
You've been waiting all day for that one. Thank you. I'm sorry they set you up. Okay, so there's that. We should find out a little bit more early in the new year about a fast train ride out to O'Hare. I think that's a great idea. Governor Rauner has been working on this Medicaid overhaul or revamp, and I am uber guilty of sometimes my eyes glaze over when it comes to some of these things, unfortunately, because they're very important issues. But try to explain, if you can, to me slowly just exactly what the governor's up to and why it's important that he does it.
Yeah, so here's the hope. It is a kind of a complex story. They're going to spend up to $15 billion a year to overhaul major Medicaid cost-saving initiative. It's called Health Choice Illinois, and the basic concept is this. If you get Medicaid recipients into managed preventive care situations where they're getting some care before they get into an emergency or urgent care situation, then you will, have healthier folks, which is a really good societal goal. People will be healthier and happier. And also, for the bottom line of the state, ultimately you would save more money. You spend a little bit more up front, you save more money on the back end because people are not going to emergency rooms as much. They're managing their conditions.
That's one of the big pillars of Obamacare, right, is the federal government mandated insurance, private insurance, pay for more preventative steps to keep people from becoming sicker later.
That's right. And so this would be a step up to $15 billion a year, up from about $10.5 billion that we're now spending as a state on managed care. But the program is estimated to save Illinois $200 to $300 million a year, about $1 billion over the initial 4-year terms of the contracts. And you would think you want that pace to pick up in order to make this net out financially. Now, obviously, from a public policy perspective, it's great to get people into situations where they're, not getting into as many emergency medical situations.
And right now, 63% are covered under this sort of privatization, and the governor's goal is to increase it to 80%.
That's right. And back in July, Cranes did find in a report that insurers were not doing a great job of tracking down and working with the Medicaid recipients who chose them or were assigned to them. And so this new program, the state is saying, will hold insurers to higher quality standards and monitor them more closely, which could mean better health outcomes overall.
So I guess I was going to ask then, so what about these other 20%? They're just left strictly on the government role?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, they're trying to do it incrementally, just like Obamacare has covered 100% of people.
Okay.
I think this is their target goal. And, hopefully, if this works, you'd ultimately want to have everybody on Medicaid, getting some more preventative care.
Kristen Schorsch wrote the story, and she writes that one of the winners here, one of the insurance company winners, is Illini Care. Sent shutters through the medical suppliers recently after announcing it was cutting reimbursement rates by up to 50%. So if you are a caregiver and you see some of these insurance companies being encouraged to cut costs, that they might not necessarily be welcoming this move toward privatization.
No, and you do see cases year after year where medical providers start opting out of being parts of these networks when the reimbursement rates go too low for them to, you know, find it sustainable. So, yeah, it is a tension in the medical economic system where, you know, if insurers cut the reimbursement rates, sometimes doctors might say, why am I even doing this?
All right, you did it. You talked slowly. You explained it to me. I think I understand it. So now tell me why the Prime House is closing in the James Hotel.
Man, I had some good steaks in that Prime House.
I knew you did. When I saw this story, I'm like, oh, this is a Frank restaurant. I can tell.
Yeah, the aging, the aged beef there. So it was David Burke's Prime House for the longest time. It's closing now after 11 years. It's going to close December 9th after dinner service. So you still have a week or so to get in there. It's in the James Hotel. And the new restaurant is not going to be a steakhouse. And that beyond that, there are no details. It does feel that we're at peak steakhouse in Chicago right now, don't you think?
I have been in very few steakhouses in my life. So the loss of another one doesn't really break my heart very much.
Yeah, my heart will go on as well, but that's only because there's, you know, like
you got more to choose from.
The old school to Prime and Provisions and the new school and Chicago Fat and everything in between. There's so many great steakhouses here, but I will say at its peak, David Burke's Prime House put out a hell of a cut of meat, and then they also had the candied bacon. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but boy, oh boy, it's making me hungry right now.
I love the idea of a bacon bar, the sandwich shop that was affixed to it.
Yeah, it was some good stuff back in the day, but you know, everything has its time, and like this segment probably.
All right, you're right, we've wet his whistle. Frank is off to lunch. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, it is 12:51 on this Wednesday afternoon. We are nearing the end of the year. Perhaps you're spending your late November looking over tax documents and things like that, trying to get prepared. What happens to your brain when you worry about the cost of Christmas, the gifts, or maybe the second semester tuition bills? Sam Barnett is on a phone line. He's a PhD, and he looked into that, and he joins us now. Sam, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks very much.
I appreciate it. Now, so are you with Think Alike Laboratories? Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. So, and I want to say first off that this study was released by Northwestern Mutual, which provides financial planning assistance to people. So the study shows that that helps relieve stress. Okay, that all makes sense. I just want to get that out there at the beginning. But tell me about your brain science and what it is you looked at and what happens to our brains when we worry about our cash.
Absolutely. So the Northwestern Mutual perspective was to approach us to conduct an independent study on how financial advice affects the brain was really to determine what, if anything, is happening during an assisted state of a brain processing these challenging financial decisions and situations. And we did the study completely independent of Northwestern Mutual. I didn't mention them or their products specifically. So we really were testing a more general question of how does financial advice help people or does it? And the notion that you posed just moments ago that it helps reduce stress is something that we thought was going to be kind of the main result. But we were surprised to see that not only does it make people calmer as evidenced by the brain signals that we measured, it also improves apparently people's ability to recognize concepts. And it also makes it easier. So it reduces attentional demand, making it easier to concentrate during these challenging situations that people have to face through all different sorts of financial decisions in their life.
I want to get to the impact there in a second, but let's just start with the first, the reaction, what happens to the brain. Now, I could invite you to my dinner table, and you wouldn't have to hook me up with wires to see what happens when I start talking about, you know, my kids' jobs or saving for college or things like that. It increases stress, right? But you wired people up, and what did you find when you wired them up?
Sure. So we used EEG, which is basically worn like a swim cap with these small metal discs that sample electrical activity from people's brains. And people watched a screen that presented different financial scenarios, and sometimes they were given assistance and sometimes they weren't. It wasn't obvious to them when they were getting tips and additional structure. They just were kind of going through different decisions and writing down answers when they were given prompts to do so. And it is stressful regardless of how you do it. But we found that we were able to see major differences in the brain when they were given assistance, to the tune of 20% or so differences in some of these signals. So, for example, relaxed attentional control, which is kind of the feeling that you make calm and reflective decisions. The signals associated with that actually improved by 21% when people were given some level of financial assistance. 21% is a very significant difference happening in just minutes. It was very interesting to see that.
Did you find that the way the brain reacted to financial stress is different than it would react to any other sort of typical stress? I mean, is there something key to finances or not so much?
So I study, broadly speaking, outside of this as well, I study lots of different natural reactions and human decisions that are complex. And I think one of the things that makes financial decisions so challenging for people and stressful at times is that there are so many kind of correct answers. There's lots of different information out there. There's lots of paths that people can take. Our brain was evolved to avoid very clear dangers, you know, to avoid the dangerous animal that could attack us and to avoid these very clear threats. But when there's a bunch of different possible paths that each have risks and rewards and pros and cons, that makes it particularly challenging and something that our brain really needs more structure and more training to be able to perform well in those paths.
And it explains why you would need reassurance or would react positively to the reassurance of getting assistance financially. Okay, let's go back to what you said earlier, though. Not only are you de-stressed a little bit, but you seem to be focused even more, that you retain and are able to make wiser decisions when you've got someone counseling you. Why do you think that is?
This was one of the most exciting results because basically it showed that just by getting some level of assistance, and again, we didn't give it, our assistance was not mediated through an individual person. It was just simply getting a little extra structure or a tip or something kind of worked into the way that a scenario was presented to our participants. And just that allows people to feel like it's a simpler choice and to feel it, we didn't tell people how to make decisions. We just gave them a little bit more of a structure around it. And we have found in this research and in other research that when a situation is presented more simply and with clearer items, then people make better decisions. They just are able to sort of focus on the key element. And this is something that we found that was across demographic groups. So regardless of income levels, and other demographic groups, age, for example, everyone seemed to benefit pretty significantly, albeit in different ways, but they benefited from the different financial information.
Sam Barnett, the lead researcher there, Think Alike Laboratories in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.